Good evening. I'm calling this special meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order on September 29, 2011. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
The Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members. Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chuck?
Hinemi.
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
It's a cultural.
Ms. Rarin is asked to be excused. Ms. Keeper?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsey?
Yes, I'm here.
Mrs. McBean is asked to be excused. Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto has asked to be excused. Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robinson has asked to be excused. Mr. Shinagawa? Ms. Robertson?
Here.
With 10 members present.
Great. And I really thank everybody for coming tonight. And the reason it's at 8:30 was because of the Southern Tier Economic Development Council meeting that just preceded this. And many of you were here.
Your mic
at that. My mic is not on.
Seems like it's
on. Now it is. All right. Thank many of you for coming to that meeting as well, and especially want to thank the staff, some of whom went home and came back, and everything else, and our guests who are here. This is, as you all know, an unusual, very unusual situation, and I appreciate the urgency of paying attention to it, sort of off cycle of our regular meetings. So, Jim, did you have your hand up?
I did, Martha, and okay. I would like to move to put this on the floor and then do the slideshow.
All right, Resolution A. All right, and Will seconds that. Approving emergency appropriation to enable chemical treatment to eradicate hydrilla in Cayuga Lake Inlet. Joe, do you want to do a little bit of an introduction here?
Yeah, very little, and I'll let our guests really go through the details here. But this resolution is simply a funding resolution. It would authorize the draw of $26,100 out of our contingency account to help support the cost of the treatment that is expected to be applied within a very short period of time from now. David Squires has circulated, I think everybody has it on their desk, how much money is in that contingency account, because we knew the question was going to come up. You can see that there are ample balances to be able to cover this expense. We're not the only ones contributing to this effort. As you see in the resolution, the DEC has committed $50,000, the manufacturer has committed $15,000 in product. There is a gap of $26,100 to do the full treatment. We have been asked to step in to fill that gap, and that's what we propose to do as a part of this resolution. It doesn't mean that we won't seek additional state contributions, because there's a good case to be made that this is a state issue that the state should deal with. We've talked to the city. I had a conversation as recently as yesterday with Julie Holcomb about a joint appeal to the state to compensate us, reimburse us for this expense. And if that fails, we will also talk to other stakeholders about potentially their contributions to this as well. Somebody had to step up and go first to fill this gap quickly, and that's what this resolution would allow us to do.
Thank you very much, Joe. I'll turn it over to Holly Manninger. Welcome, and thank you very much for coming.
Thank you. It's our pleasure to be here today to talk to you about our work as part of the Hydrilla Task Force and to brief you about the state of affairs, what's happened, where we were, and just a couple month and a half ago, and where we are now today. So we'd like to start, and I should say my position, I'm coordinator of the New York Invasive Species Research Institute, and that's a position that was recommended by the state Invasive Species Task Force back in 2005, and it's my role to help sort of be the conduit between the scientific community, the researchers who are studying invasive species, and the management practitioners who are on the ground actually dealing and managing invasive species on a daily basis. And I help to bring the science to the management and to also have the management inform the science. And so when hydrilla was first detected here in the Cayuga Inlet, it made a lot of sense for me, since by geography, was very close to the situation, to really step in and help take a leadership role in assembling the hydrilla task force. So I'll start by saying that hydrilla was first collected on August 4th in a sample by volunteers, routine sampling by the volunteers with the floating classroom. They found a piece of plant that they thought was pretty funky looking. They weren't sure what it was, and they contacted Bob Johnson, who's an aquatic ecologist, formerly at Cornell, now retired, who has his own consulting business and is a aquatic botanist, specializes in an aquatic plant. And Bob took a look at the piece of plant that looked suspicious, did not look like Elodea, which is a native plant that we have growing quite prolifically in the lake. And Bob took a look, and I think you can say fairly that his heart sank because realized that it was hydrilla. He officially confirmed it on August 5th and went out in a few places along the Cahuva Inlet. It was collected near this location here. This is the stream Linderman Creek, is what it's known as on the map, but it's the creek that flows underneath the running path near Cass Park. And he found a very dense infestation growing near there, and that's a sample that he had collected. The plant, I will say, is it's an invasive species from native to Asia. It was first detected in the U.S. in the 1960s. They believe it arrived in Florida as an aquarium plant that someone had growing in their aquarium, and they dumped it in Florida. And since then, it has spread throughout much of the East Coast of the U.S. and then into parts of the central U.S. and even as far as California. Continuing on that timeline, Bob realized he assembled a crew and boats and went out with equipment and actually did surveys throughout the length of the inlet all the way down to the 89 bridge and found dense infestations of hydrilla growing along, particularly in Cascadilla Creek, from the docks of the farmer's market all the way around past Johnson's boat yard and all the way up towards the haunt. I don't know if there's a pointer on here. Oh, I can probably point with it. So very dense infestation growing there. Another dense infestation was found growing around the docks of the boathouses for both the Cornell and Ithaca College rowing teams, the crew teams. There's a little embayment there where there was a lot. And then the other place was near Cass Park. Since then, we've actually found a pretty sizable infestation growing near the Allen Treeman State Marina near the boat launch there. So he conducted surveys helping us delineate the extent of the infestation throughout the inlet. And then we contacted a number of researchers who had more experience with hydrilla in other states, particularly a scientist from the University of Florida and a scientist from University of California, Davis, who also has an appointment with the USDA. And they recommended, so that we could date the infestation, that we collect tubers. So what this plant does, and I'll go back to the previous slide, is it has these vegetative storage structures. You can think of them like bulbs that flowers in your garden may have that they put down. So the green part of the plant may die in the winter, as it's likely to do in Ithaca, but it's able to keep these tubers in the sediment. So Bob was able to go out, and he actually found tubers growing in some of those dense patches. But they were growing straight down from the stems of the plant. They weren't just sitting there in the sediment, which indicated to us that those were tubers that were created this year. And were one piece of evidence that helped us to think that this infestation was probably less than 2 years old. By August 19th, the New York State DEC was involved. They called me. They heard about the detection. We're working closely with Bob. And we gathered together the Cayuga Inlet Hydrilla Task Force. And that was comprised of folks from state agencies like DEC, both the Albany office as well as the regional office, New York State Parks, Canal Corporation, and numerous local entities from the county and from the city, as well as, I think, local advocacy groups and environmental organizations. So the Cayuga Lake Watershed Network was also present, Cornell Cooperative Extension, and a number of scientific faculty at Cornell. That was our first task force meeting, and I can say that after that Friday meeting, we've had meetings every Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. since. So that group has consistently been meeting by conference call. One thing that was really important in to help us evaluate what our potential management options would be was to really know the extent of the infestation, particularly had it escaped from the inlet into the lake. There, we know there's a lot of boat traffic moving there, and we know that the water can move and pieces of this plant can move. And so on Labor Day weekend, we helped organize. There was folks from the city, Bob provided crews, and a number of people, Cornell, gave up their Labor Day weekend to go out and survey the south shelf of the lake where we thought that this plant might likely be growing. So we hit 350 points. All of those are represented there on that map along the south shelf of the lake. We know based on previous studies of the lake that things tend to come out of the inlet, and then given the currents and the movement of wind and water, they tend to get blown around towards Stewart Park. And so we thought that if this plant, hydrilla had been there a long time, we would have expected to see pieces of the plant there growing up against Stewart Park, and we didn't find any pieces, nor did we find any actually out in the lake proper. We did find a few small fragments near the mouth of the inlet near both lighthouses, and actually a floating piece a little bit out in the lake, but no dense patches that had established in the sediment. And that Labor Day weekend as well is when we started a very huge outreach movement. We, ever since Labor Day weekend, we've had tables stationed at the Ithaca Farmers Market, and that weekend in particular, we were also located at the Johnson's Boatyard so we could reach boaters. And New York State Parks has had staff at their launches every weekend educating boaters since then. So now I'll turn it over to Roxy.
So I'm going to pick up on September 7th. I think this almost really happened at our first task force meeting on August 19th, but we came up with a recommendation to use herbicide. And I think we're going to talk about that a little bit later in another slide about the options we might have had and why none of those were really available to us. So I'm going to skip over that right now. At first, this fell to the city to take the lead on. The logic is a little hard to get your mind wrapped around, but as it turns out, the state of New York has no mandate to deal with aquatic invasive plants. They can deal with aquatic invasive animals and land invasive plants and animals, but they don't have a law about invasive plants in the water. So there are no staff, there's no budget, there's no program. So they weren't going to play a leadership role in this. And the only other entity that there was any logic about was that everywhere the plant had been found was bounded by land that was part of the city of Ithaca. So the city of Ithaca took the lead. Pretty quickly, Tompkins County Soil and Water Conservation District, and John Negley is here tonight representing them, helped us out by taking on the Herculean task of submitting the permit for herbicide application and going through all those details. Shortly after that, September 19th, through our outreach efforts, we were asking people to not use their boats, to not come into these docking areas because that's where all the dense infestations were, and we really weren't having a good compliance with that. So the city released a request, a media release, that we would strongly discourage boat use in the inlet. We had some compliance on that. Definitely the crew teams from Ithaca College and Cornell have both relocated for now. The floating classroom, I think, relocated today, and they canceled their boat tours earlier than that. So we've definitely had some compliance on that. Still, it was hard to reach folks who are just showing up and don't know about this, so we closed the docks. Our paddle docks are really all that the city controls, but the farmers market agreed to also close their docks and asked us to help them with signage, so they closed also on September 23rd. And then on September 26th, we needed some more detailed surveys in the inlet to see how far south this plant infestation extended. And unfortunately, it does extend south of the 79 bridge. There's some dense beds, at least particularly on the west side of the inlet. And fill me in if I miss something. And I think that fragments were found, floating fragments, all the way up to the fish ladder. Okay, so why should we be worried? At first, I think there was a little bit of a joke about, like, did we have hydrilla? Was it, what did you say, Godzilla? As it turns out, everyone sort of adopted that term, and we call it hydrozilla now because this plant is just a nightmare. It can clog motors, the propellers. The boats won't be able to move. It picks up on boat trailers. We discovered very quickly the first weekend we had people watching the Treeman Marina. You really cannot take your boat out without getting it all over the boat and the trailer. So what the state parks folks said was that a lot of clean boats came in and a lot of dirty boats left. And so they were trying very hard to catch folks. And even folks who are trying to be aware and clean their trailer off, it's just so hard to find every little piece. And then you have the water in the engine-cooled area and the bilge area. You could still be carrying fragments off. Or the boat is next to the trailer. You can't remove fragments there. So these fragments can take root all by themselves, just like you take a house plant and you cut it off, put it in water. These take root all the time. So they're a problem in themselves. The good thing about the vegetative piece is that it will dry up pretty fast. So if you don't put your trailer boat back in the water, that's one good way to solve that problem. And also they'll freeze kill. Now, another thing it does is it starts multiplying these tubers in the ground. So you can think of that as kind of like a seed bank. It's building up. That's going to happen pretty soon. In fact, it is happening now in Linderman Creek. And we don't want that to happen right now. This plant really doesn't have a seed bank. So if we can knock it back, we're just dealing with what we have now instead of an exponentially larger problem next year. And then the final thing that it does is it produces these vegetative buds along the stem. And these stems can be 25 feet long, and they grow an inch a day. So all along these stems, it starts setting these things called turions. And I think Holly likes to call them vegetative spawn. And so they are lightweight. They float better. They attach to birds, people, boats. They sit on the sediment. They can distribute everywhere. And they can start a new plant next year. So it's another way to create, a, quote, unquote, a seed bank. They're not, none of it's a seed, but you can think of it that way. And we don't want that to happen. This plant is projected that, say, in 3 to 5 years, it could actually close off the entire inlet because it does grow that fast. And any place else that has shallow water, it could completely clog it off. So when it does that, it creates complete coverage with thick mats, so it will actually crowd out all the other native plants. It will reduce the oxygen in the water, so it can cause fish kills all by itself. It has been linked to blue-green algae outbreaks. The mechanism isn't understood, but when blue-green algae blooms happen, they create neurotoxins, and so it has been directly linked to killing waterfowl and even the birds of prey that feed on other waterfowl. So bald eagle kills have been linked to coverage of this plant. So that's the ecological disaster that it poses. The economic disaster is, of course, that there's no boating, fishing, or swimming. It's not really great for tourism. And if left unchecked, instead of several thousands of dollars, it easily goes to the millions of dollars to manage. For example, the two states that I like to give, Florida did not immediately go for eradication when it occurred in that state. And depending on the year now, they spend $18 to $30 million a year, and all they do is mow a path. California, because they rely so heavily on irrigation channels for their agricultural economy, recognized this as a potential disaster, and they immediately set up emergency response programs. In fact, if they find it in California, within 24 to 48 hours, the water body is closed, completely quarantined, and then they can assess all their options. But they spend $2 to $5 million a year, and they're 95% effective. It's a big state. You can't find all the outbreaks right away, and the plant just grows so fast. We're trying to avoid ending up in one of those categories. They're both pretty bad.
So I think that one of the other reasons, in addition to all the potential local impacts we will have on our aquatic ecosystems and on our economy here in the Ithaca area, is that the potential for hydrilla to spread beyond the Cayuga Inlet into Cayuga Lake and the adjacent Finger Lakes and regionally throughout New York State and the Northeast is enormous. This is the first time in New York State that hydrilla has been found in a water body that's hydrologically connected to so many other water bodies. Cayuga Lake is connected via the Cayuga-Seneca Canal to the Finger Lakes and then ultimately all the way through the Erie Canal up to Lake Erie. This is the first time that connected, and there's so much boater traffic and movement between Cayuga Lake and all of the other lakes in our state and throughout the Northeast that the potential for regional spread throughout this area, which has not happened yet, is quite enormous. We consider the hydrilla situation, the inlet, to be an early detection, rapid response situation. We think that we have caught it in the early stages. As I mentioned, we have several pieces of evidence that indicate that it's been here less than 2 years, and we know from the many, many years that people have been managing invasive species, the earlier you catch a species, the less area that it covers, the cheaper it is to take care of it, to control it, and possibly even to eradicate it. And so we think that we have a real opportunity here to take action in a way to prevent it from becoming a much larger problem and a much larger burden regionally throughout our state and throughout the Northeast.
So this is where we're going to talk about why we picked the herbicide and why we didn't pick some other options. So the selected management approach is to use a quick-acting contact herbicide called Indethol. The trade name is Aquathol K. And the goal is to stop the vegetative growth now before turion production occurs or before they mature, and to slow the tubers and stop them from multiplying, and to buy us all of next season to start removing the tubers that are in the sediment now. I mentioned earlier that turions are being formed in Linderman Creek, and we've talked about that, and we've looked in the inlet. Turions are not being formed yet in the inlet, and while the hurricane events did not help us by moving fragments into the lake and making our job of checking in the lake next year that much more critical and harder, it did apparently help us in one way. It made the inlet very turbid for a long time, and it seems to have slowed down the maturation of the dense growths in the inlet proper. And so they aren't setting turions yet. And if it came right down to it, Linderman Creek is actually small where it enters the inlet, and it could be barricaded physically. But we have a little time, just like when a fruit starts to develop on a tree, and you try to pick it too early, it doesn't want to come off. That's where the turions are now. So they aren't releasing yet, so we still have a little bit of time. This is not a one-shot deal. We've talked to the experts in California who have that 95% success rate, and this is a five-year commitment. You stop the growth, and we've been talking more to the scientists and the regulators and the applicators who have experience with this. It's also not a one-shot herbicide treatment. It's this fall to stop it before it adds more to a kind of a seed bank, and it's also in the spring a couple different times to keep it from even getting started. But during that same time frame in the spring, what you go in and you start physically removing the tubers from the whole area. So that'll be a Herculean task, and that's when everybody in the community can get involved and help out. It'll be muddy and fun, I suppose. But it's 5 years. You never get it all at once, so you have to keep going back and mapping it and looking for it all the time. One thing that is sort of encouraging is we've been talking to more applicators who have a lot of experience in the southern states, and they feel that we are early on the invasion curve, and they feel like we have a very good shot of eradicating it. And so if we follow this plan that they recommend of this fall and spring, they really think they won't come back. You know, they won't need to come back with the chemical treatment. We just have to be on top of it right now. So some of the alternatives that other places can use, you can drain the whole water body and then just deal with the tubers in the sediment. You can probably imagine why that's not something we seriously considered. You can also cover the entire area with benthic barriers. Again, that's a little bit unfeasible. Something that's used sometimes are grass carp. In theory, you could contain them so they don't get away. In practice, that might be really complicated, and they are not selective. They will eat everything. Great Lakes states are suing other Great Lakes states for carp invasions because of the damage they wreak on the habitat, so we don't want to create another problem. There is no selective biocontrol. Holly can correct me if I get this wrong, but there is a bug in China that will eat it. The plant typically grows in warmer climates. The plant can live colder, the bug can't. So maybe in a few decades when climate change has progressed, the bug will come, but we'd like to stop it before that. So those are some of the options. The only other thing that is sort of feasible is this diver-assisted dredging, and it is literally underwater weeding. So a diver goes down, they carefully remove these tubers that are 4 to 6 inches down in the sediment, and they feed them up into a vacuum tube. And that is, in fact, how we will get rid of the tubers, with the herbicide to help us keep from being any bigger problem than it is now. And we even have a very typical Ithaca solution to that. We will probably use some of the vacuum trucks that the Water and Sewer Department already has, truck the biomass over to the wastewater facility, digest it, make methane, and run our pumps. So, you know, alternative energy at its best. So we are getting very close to fulfilling the permit obligations and working out other details about herbicide applications. So action is anticipated very soon. Oh, and this is the last slide. So just to give you a visual on what this plant can do, the first picture was taken right after the plant was discovered, and all of that is hydrilla on the left, on my left. So that's pretty bad already. The second picture, the lighting's a little different, but it is complete closure. That's 3 weeks of growth. This plant literally really does grow an inch a day. The time is of the essence. And that's it for our presentation tonight. We'll entertain questions.
Thank you very much. Peter, Carol?
I got a couple of questions. I'm trying to imagine how you use the herbicide. You sprinkle it on the growth that's on the top of the water, is that it? And how do you get the plant roots with that? That's one question. And the other question is, what exactly happened to China? I mean, what did they do? Did they just let it grow wild, and does it have some kind of a self-limiting process, or is China just one big mass of
hydrilla? Well, let me do the second one, and I'll give John the first one. The second one is China has the bug. There is a bug that eats hydrilla, and there is a balance in that system. We don't have that bug. It can't live here. It can't live in this cold of a climate. So we don't have that option.
So to answer the question about the application, it's going to be applied with boats. They're going to have airboats like you see in the Florida Everglades there. They're not going to be flying up and down the inlet, obviously. They're going to probably be going 2 miles an hour applying this with booms. And what they'll be doing is they'll be either spraying it directly close to the surface or under the water, injecting it into the water, or they'll be in very dense areas spraying it with handguns, just right close to the infestation. It's a contact herbicide, so what that means is when it comes into contact with the plant, it kills it. So it's not a there's a contact and a systemic. The systemic herbicide would actually go into the roots and kill the roots. This is not one of those. This is a contact herbicide. It just kills the vegetation on top. And what we're trying to do, killing that vegetation, is with the tubers, I guess the turions, we're trying to eliminate those so that we don't get regrowth for next year. And this is going to be we're going to have to probably reapply again in the spring to kill any regrowth that comes up. And then, like Roxy was saying with the assisted divers, that's where you're going to get the roots out of the sediment in the bottoms.
After the second application, you mean?
And I would also add that as we go further into the season, the plant stems are actually, and I forgot to pass around, I actually have the plant. So if you would like to see hydrilla up close and in person, the stems of the plants are really brittle and break apart very easily, so that even paddles of rowers, kayakers, etc., can break pieces of the plant apart. On those little tiny fragments that are this big can set roots. And so the idea is to get rid of the biomass so that the potential for spread, either via the turions or by the green pieces of the plant, will be gone. And so it's to stop things in place. Now, there are no there's a systemic herbicide that has been widely used in Florida called Floridome. That herbicide requires a 60-day contact time. So you have to maintain the concentration in the water for 60 days. It's a very low concentration. We don't have the growing season or the luxury of 60 days to consider something like that, nor would that probably be amenable to our community to have an herbicide in the water for that long. And even that herbicide does not kill the tubers in the sediment.
Carol, Jim, and Dave.
Yeah, I have two questions. One, the amount of time that boaters would need to let their boats sit dry to kill it before they put it back into another water body. I want to know what it is, but
I think a week is safe if you can air it out properly. If there's nooks and crannies and air bladders and bilges and things like drop keels and in sailboats, right. And so the key is to make sure that everything is open and accessible to air. And I think it's within 7 days. The research is in process to give you an exact date. I can tell you that a piece that I pulled out of of the water and had on the dashboard of my car was toast in about a day. So, but again, boats have lots of nooks and crannies and places on trailers, but I think a 7-day window is probably a good one to recommend.
Okay. Well, I have personal contact with other boaters, and there's an awful lot of boaters who are not local, who come from, you know, at the marina.
Yeah,
the
we people met, we meet are from them. Being,
and you know, it's unless you're going literally putting signs boat to boat, and at people who are with small boats, you might achieve better compliance if you're really clear at that launch.
Right, that, and so that's why we have
that it would take a week, because mm-hmm. If there's an open-ended time frame and here is the end of the season and people want to get in their last licks, if it's open-ended, but if they know they can take their boat out, let it sit for a week and still get a few last licks, you just might get better compliance with it.
Right. Here, well, we're also asking people, though, to avoid using the inlet period, because the idea is we can encourage clean boating practices and ask people to dry off their boats, but the reality is that any boat traffic in the inlet that's going through patches of hydrilla has the opportunity to catch it and to spread, which is why the city and the county are talking about the very drastic actions of actually closing the inlet. So certainly clean boating practices and outreach has been a key part of our work, and that there are all sorts of signs and boat stewards that are being placed around the state park launches and around the city launches. But ultimately what it comes down to right now is that we don't want people in the water.
Okay, and then I have a question about dredging and how this might or might not impact the time frame, if there is one, for the dredging of the inlet project.
Certainly we now have to consider the tubers that are in the sediment. That's a whole other consideration, and I don't know if Bill Gray wanted to add to that, but I'll give him a chance if he wants to comment on any impacts on the dredging project for the city.
One way or the other, you know, is it more important to dredge so that we can see where the tubers are, or more important now maybe to not dredge so fast?
We don't have the time frame fixed for the dredging. It's possible that next spring and next summer's activities will occur before there's any dredging, but we're also discussing with the DEC what changes this might involve when we get around to the dredging. So it's a good question. We're already asking it. I don't have the answers tonight.
Jim, Dave, and then...
My question was sort of answered. What action does the county have to take in the next 6 weeks with boat traffic? And clearly it's not... You know, boating is still going on. There are other things that are, up and down the channel. So where are we and what are we going to do? And maybe this is not the time, but is anybody from the county ready to, you know, sign on the dotted line and do something or what?
We have a meeting tomorrow with some county representatives and city representatives, and we're going to be working out a timeline that's a lot faster than 6 weeks.
Okay.
And have a coordinated approach to stop the boating and time their herbicide application and move that forward.
The 6 weeks is a number I just made up.
I want to say it's a lot faster.
What I really wanted you to do to say is that you had some idea about what you wanted to do about the channel. There are some economic issues at hand as we go ahead and do that. The other thing is, obviously, it's a budget item, so it looks like to me that we would probably include 25K or so moving forward in 2012, maybe for the next 3 or 4 years, or at least for next year.
That's a policy call you're going to need to make. We were, in drafting this resolution, we were careful to say this is not a precedent, so don't assume anything. It is something that you're going to want to consider as the weeks go by. Jim, you did open up, though. I do want to recognize that there are a number of county staff people here along with city staff. This has been a coordinated effort. Liz Cameron's been playing the point for us. If action is needed to shut down the inlet, and sounds like it may be, the sheriff has indicated that he's prepared to cooperate in that regard, to exercise his powers. So we are approaching this with urgency and in cooperation with the city, and that will be an important meeting tomorrow to get the game plan all set.
Okay, so how does that happen? I got your pen. If there's a decision to entirely close the inlet, is that something that
the sheriff can do without our, you know, action at all? At all? I'm asking Joe, Roxy.
Yes, he can.
Okay. Ken, do you want to speak to that at all?
I didn't hear anything you said, but I was talking about me being able to close it down without anybody else.
You should go to the microphone.
Right.
Yeah.
Grab the mic.
Before I left last week, I attended a meeting to start to be asked to be involved with this along with Lee. And now that I've come back, I've seen that the problem has gotten bigger than it was when we talked at that time. I am prepared to shut the inlets down. I'm going to a meeting tomorrow at 10 o'clock to get some more information. This has been very enlightening tonight. And I will sit down with everybody tomorrow after that 10 o'clock meeting and make that decision if it's immediate or if there's some kind of leeway that we can go with a few days. That's what I'm looking at. And when it comes time, I'm prepared to close it. We've already started to look into buoys. We've contacted the Coast Guard. I'm going to speak to the New York State Park Police to see if they can help us with the patrol to keep it shut down. So we've looked at that. Joe has met with Captain Lapman, and he's talked about the financial aspects of what it could cost. So we're looking at all those, and we will be prepared to shut it down as soon as we can or feel we should.
Let me just say, I think that a contact with Tim Joseph from Finger Lakes Parks would probably be to some of your
advantage. Can I add something? That today the state parks issued a press release that they're closing Alan Treeman Marina as of Saturday morning, and that was authorized by Tim Joseph, and he's been an important player and part of our task force and has been part of these efforts.
Okay, and is there a time limit on how long, thank you, Holly, is there, on how long you can close, the sheriff can close the inlet?
No.
That's a short answer.
All right, I have Dave, Pat, and then Will. Anything else right now, Ken? Okay, Dave, Pat, Will, and then Peter.
Okay, I just had a question. How deep does this stuff grow? Is it non-existent below 10 feet or something like that?
Unfortunately, hydrilla is extremely tolerant of low light levels, and it will certainly grow in the deepest depths of the inlet, which are about 12 feet or a little deeper. It will certainly grow throughout the southern shelf of Cayuga Lake and certainly the north end of Cayuga Lake that are more shallow. We're not going to find it in the deepest part of the lake, certainly, but it will ring the edges of it. And we'll be able to grow entirely throughout the inlet. There have been some studies that have shown that it's grown in waters as deep as 30 feet.
Okay.
Pat?
Is this herbicide species-specific, or is it going to have an impact on the other aquatic plants and so on? And if so, what do you think is going to happen?
That's a good question. The chemical endothal is a contact herbicide, and it's a general contact herbicide, but we know that some plants are more susceptible to it than others. So hydrilla is very susceptible to endothal. Elodea, which is a native plant that grows prolifically throughout, has a very low susceptibility. Plants like eelgrass, Vallisneria, which is also very common, is medium susceptibility, as well as pondweeds. The important thing to remember is that our native plants reproduce by producing seeds, and they have already actively been producing those seeds. And so while they may be knocked back near the end of their growing season right now, we expect that they'll be able to come back next year just fine.
Thank you. Will?
Back to the question of closing the inlet. Do we have, and maybe this question for John, do we have at this point the legal authority to do that, and who actually controls the inlet? And is there anything more that's needed in terms of local legislation to give us the tools?
No, the sheriff has the power to close the inlet. What is needed, I mean, there are forms, in fact, we actually went to the sheriff that have been used by other county sheriffs in closing inlets. There doesn't need to be any county legislation, but there needs to be the sheriff has to be prepared with buoys, et cetera, to physically do that and monitor it. But legally, there's not an impediment.
Thank you.
Peter?
A couple of my questions have gotten answered. But I'm wondering, is it appropriate to call a question?
Well, I have a couple questions. I don't know if anybody else has other questions.
Well, I bet you, is it appropriate to call a question?
Yeah, it's appropriate to call a question.
A question.
Is there a second?
I will second.
All right. All those in favor of closing debate, of calling the question, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So that fails. I think it's important to, we're educating the public as well as ourselves at this moment. Were there any other questions besides mine? Okay. You mentioned next spring. We're talking about 26,000 for right now and then hoping to go to the DEC. Cost next spring, is that that's a different ticket? Is that right?
That's probably going to be a different number come next spring, because we are going to have at least one application, which is going to be a different size treatment area. Right now we're working with a 95-acre treatment area. That could be larger, that could be smaller, and we may even have to do one treatment in the spring and another later down the road. So that would increase the costs. And then suction dredging, we haven't even gotten into cost for that yet, so that's going to be another added cost.
We do. We have one estimate that costs approximately $6,000 an acre, was the, I think, the estimate that we had heard when we had talked to a potential contractor as we were looking at potential options.
So if DEC is prepared at this point, they've pledged $50,000. Is this going to become a state project, right now we're forwarding this because of the timing and we want to get this be ready as soon as the approvals are ready, etc. But there's time between now and next spring.
I think that's a very good question for your legislative leaders to ask of the state elected representatives. It's been a big hurdle that the DEC has no mandate. They have no legal way to go after this. On that note, I don't really have in my job title to go after closing the inlet either. But I think they could have asked their commissioner and the governor to at least be aware of it. But it would help a lot if the state legislators passed some mechanisms and some tools for DEC to be funded to deal with this.
Okay. There. So where does the $50,000 come from?
Specific funding source from DEC, I am not sure of. That would probably be a question of Craig or you do.
A little bit. So several years ago, there was the Office of Invasive Species Coordination was formed within DEC as a division level office to manage invasive species, and their funding comes from the Environmental Protection Fund for a lot of projects and programs. And it was my understanding that they were working with the deputy commissioners to secure emergency funding from probably that pot of money, but that it's a little bit unclear how those top-level discussions and the executive briefings went.
Okay.
John. We have heard on task force phone calls that DEC is looking for other funding for future years, and I think they have some, mm-hmm. But I don't know the total value. I don't know exactly what it's for. I don't know if it's reimbursement cost, so... They are looking for some more for
the
future.
I know that the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative is a program that has provided funding to a number of federal agencies to then funnel money to the states. And so the Hydrilla project has been included in this next budget for the Fish and Wildlife Service portion of the GLR monies that are going to be allocated to New York State.
Okay, Joe.
And that's, I think, what's referenced in Craig's letter to me back on September 19th. He says that it's important to add that New York State DEC is working on a contract that would go through FL-LOWPA.
Yep, FLOPA.
And then used to be subcontracted to the Soil and Water Conservation District for $230,406 for the 2012 and 2013 Hydrilla project. You think that's the number that's attached to it?
Okay. I mean, they don't have a mandate to do it, but it doesn't say that they can't do it.
That's right.
I agree.
And do we have any idea how it got here?
I suspect that it hitchhiked on a boat. or boat equipment or trailers is probably the most likely way. That's how it has tended to spread throughout other areas in the U.S. is that all it takes is one small piece or a turion to hitchhike. It could have been an aquarium dump, but given the location near a number of boat launches, marinas, and facilities where boats are frequently moving to areas where there are hydrilla infestations, it's likely it hitchhiked.
And we've talked to the major boat areas, and they have pretty good programs for cleaning the boats when they come out of the water. They don't necessarily power wash them all before they go in. And New York State actually failed to pass a law about cleaning boats, I guess, this last winter. So that would be another issue, I think, to raise with your elected representatives to pass some better rules so that we'd be protected. Because we could, in theory, eradicate this and then just have a boat waltz in here and bring it right back.
I would like to ask that when y'all get, you know, your heads above water, so to speak, if somebody can lay those out for us, what are the legislative remedies, what are the things we ought to be advocating, it would be very helpful. Pat?
With respect, because I would really like to be able to vote on this, and I do support it, but I'm just wondering if some of this discussion we're having now couldn't be referred to one of our standing committees for some regular update so that we could go ahead and vote, because I can't stay any longer and I really don't want to have to just walk out.
All right. So I would ask that PDEC follow this up as a regular matter. All right. Dooley?
When this resolution was moved, was it the revised version that
was
being moved?
The one that was passed out.
Thank you.
You mean with the agenda or that was passed out tonight?
It was passed out separately. It says it's got changes and a couple of cross-outs, and it was the one the clerk passed out.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Are we all set with those changes, Julie?
Well,
Carol?
Wait, so did you accept it's with the changes? Because I'm fine with the changes that were offered. Thanks.
All right. We need a short roll call vote.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Would anyone like to be recorded as no? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. I really appreciate everybody's work here and appreciate you coming. Jim?
Move to adjourn.
All right. I think we're adjourned. Thank you.